And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's time to get to work this Saturday morning. It's funny how things line up, and sometimes the impressions that people make upon you. I remember about, it might have been 4 or 5 months ago, a gentleman asked me a question. It was in like a group setting, but he said a word that I don't hear many people talk about, but the word was telomeres. And so I kind of pondered that for a little bit. So you know how it is when you're reading something, you come across the word telomeres, you go, oh yeah, I remember somebody was talking about that, and you know, let me learn some more about it. Well, what a telomere is, it's the very end of the chromosome or the DNA. And as long as you have sufficient telomeres in reserve, almost like as long as you have a battery attached to your car, you can constantly rebuild and divide and grow brand new cells. So you need telomeres to do that. the reason I said battery, my battery totally died on me last week. So what I did was I walked to the parts store, got a new battery, and they gave me the wrong one. So I did the whole thing all over again. Evidently, Roy needed some extra exercise, right? Well, as it worked out yesterday, a lady was scheduled to see me at 10 o'clock. And, you know, it's just the way it is. When you come from a long way away, sometimes there's interruptions in traffic. So she had called me, and she said she was going to be a few moments late. And so I had this book that I find so fascinating. It's written by Thomas R. Verney, M.D. It's called The Embodied Mind. And it's definitely a much different take on the usual cut-and-dry information. And I think that I need that sometimes. Sometimes things are black and white. Sometimes things are harder to measure. They're not necessarily black and white, but they still have a very powerful impact. But it's kind of funny because after I got off the phone with her, I kind of flipped the book open. And I really didn't flip it open with any intentions that this was exactly where I stopped before, but I thought this was interesting. And so I was reading about, what is the lady's name, Elizabeth Blackburn. She's a biochemist at the University of California, San Francisco. And she has a colleague by the name of Elisa Appel. And they found, and just take it with a grain of salt, they found that meditation could actually affect the ends of your DNA. That's known as the telomeres. Some people call them telomeres. That's fine. And what these are protective caps for the end of your genes. As long as you have good, rich telomeres, guess what happens? Your body can heal and repair. But when they're gone, you can't heal and repair anymore. And so once a cell's DNA loses its telomere, it can no longer divide, and then the cell dies. And so one of the things that causes a person to stop walking the earth is they have their telomeres are gone, so they experience massive cell death, and that brings about rapid aging. Now get this. This is the part that I read yesterday waiting on the lady to come. Telomeres, like immune cells, they respond to emotions. And get this. Negative emotions shorten telomeres, while happy feelings help to maintain their structure. Now, I realize this is not going to make, you know, logical sense just yet, but I want to share something else with you, and it's really the same topic, but I'm going to do it from a different direction. And so I was really thankful for that. And so when she walked in the door, we started just visiting just for a brief moment as we're kind of getting ready for the visit. We're just trying to get down to business as to what needs to take place and what a person's needs are and what direction they want to go. And those are all very, very important. And actually, I like it. I want people to say, this is exactly what I want and what I want to accomplish. And so I shared that information with her, and she started opening up to me about her childhood. And, I mean, I'm not going to go into all of it, but can I just give you the overall gist? It has got to be really, really hard. It really does. to have a childhood where you just don't quite measure up, and you can't ever seem to meet the expectations of a parent. Now, personally, I don't know what that feels like, because my mother and father, and you already know what I'm going to say, nobody's perfect, but I just didn't have the experience that I wasn't good enough or couldn't measure up. And so, but there's a lot of people that do. There's a lot of people that have a really rough childhood because their parent, whether it was a single mother or it was a mother and a father or a single father, they just have this feeling that they can't quite measure up. Well, let me share this with you right here. And this to me has got to be one of the most fascinating, interesting topics, but I'm telling you, it hits me square between the eyes when I read stuff like this, because I start thinking, well, how does that work? But what, you know where my mind always goes with this stuff. I think, how did God design all this? And well, I'm not going to know the answer to that. He's God. But I still think everything comes back to, what is the universal truth in the universe? Is there 15 different truths? Well, no, there's not. Let me read this to you right here. There's a pretty famous Japanese author, researcher, photographer, and entrepreneur. I like him. But all this took place back in the 1990s. His name is Masaru Emoto. He's Japanese. Well, what he did was, he found himself in a very unique situation where he started doing experiments on water, and he went from the liquid state to where he would freeze the water, and then he would take pictures of these beautiful crystals that would form, and sometimes the crystals weren't so beautiful. But what he did was, he wanted to observe the effects of either words or prayers or music and the environment on this crystalline structure of water. Okay? I realize this might be a little bit deep, but just kind of hear me out here. Dr. Emoto exposed water to different variables, and then he subsequently froze it so that crystalline structures were formed. What I want you to think about is, I want you to think about the image of a snowflake. Each one is very unique, but you've seen snowflakes that are just amazing in their architecture and their form and their shape. Well, in one series of experiments, Dr. Emoto, he taped, that's all he did was, he wrote words, and then he taped them on containers that were filled with water. That's all that was in the glass jar, was water. But on one jar, he had a very, very positive word, like, thank you. On the other word, on the other bottle, he would write the term, you fool, or that's, you know, that's not really complimentary to call somebody a fool, is it? But if you thank somebody and show appreciation, is that a positive emotion? Absolutely. Well, if you write the term, you fool, on a jar of water, it's just interesting. So, the water container that was stamped with the positive words produced more symmetrical and aesthetically pleasing crystals than the water in containers stamped with dark, negative phrases. Okay, are you with me? According to Dr. Emoto, water is the mirror of the mind. Emoto's research demonstrates that human vibrational energy, which would be words spoken or written, feelings, and music, that they actually affect the molecular structure of water. But it is not only the water that our thoughts and feelings affect. It's talking about the previous chapter, but it's talking about emotions in the heart. So recall from the previous chapter how rhythmic, even patterns of the heart become erratic, disordered, and incoherent when you're exposed to negative emotions such as anger or frustration. In contrast, positive emotions such as love or appreciation, well, they're associated with a very smooth, ordered or orderly coherent pattern of the heart. I don't know about you, but if you have an EKG done, do you want it to be a textbook, beautiful, smooth, ordered, coherent pattern on the EKG? Or do you want that to be all over the place, showing that your heart is in great stress and it's diseased and it's sick? Well, We know the answer to that. You want it to look good. Nobody really wants a test to show that they're, and you know what? I had a guy yesterday tell me, and he's spot on. You've only got one body. You've only got one chance. So I do think this is a great learning opportunity. I'm agreeing with him. So many people have tried to replicate Dr. Emoto's rice experiment, and this is a different story, but in Dr. Verney, the reason I can remember the name Thomas Verney easily is because I used to have an Aunt Verney. She was something else. She was probably like about 4'11", maybe. Anyway, here it is right here. You can't see the book, but I'm looking at a picture of the rice experiment. And let me just describe it to you. These jars are like classic food storage jars. For all I know, maybe the Mason Company is the one that made them. But they have a metal bracket around the upper mouth of the jar, and there is a glass lid with a rubber seal. And when you clamp that sucker down, it keeps everything inside the jar free from contamination. Or maybe it's the purpose is to keep whatever's inside the jar very fresh. How would you like to leave the jar of rice open where it was able to be contaminated by moisture, mold, fungus, anyway, bacteria, stuff like that? Well, you wouldn't want that. So these jars, and you can see on the jar, the word thank you is written on one jar of rice, and the word you fool is written on the other jar of rice. And so I'm looking at them. They start this experiment. Let me see if I can read this right here. They started their experiment on February the 1st, 2007. They kept the two labeled jars of cooked white rice on top of their piano. And you can actually see it. It's on top of their piano, literally. And they weren't too far apart so that they would have the same light and the same room temperature. And I realize it may not be a perfect experiment. So toward the rice on the left, they daily directed their voices saying, thank you, you're beautiful. And that's actually written on a jar of rice. Okay? Now toward the jar of the rice on the right-hand side, which is, what, 3 inches between the two jars or maybe 2.5? They write the phrase, you fool and you stink. You know what this reminds me of? Sometimes when I walk in the office, I talk to the plants. I'm going, oh my goodness, you're such a good girl. Look at how beautiful you are. But I don't ever say you fool or you stink. Okay, so you cannot see the picture, but I can. But let's put it this way. There's rice that you would look at and say, I would like to eat some of that. And then there's rice that you would look at and say, excuse me, I can't even tell that's rice. It looks like rotten filth that comes from a compost pile filled with compost tea and raw sewage. That's the one that looks bad that says, you fool, you stink. And so these images at 6 months are just completely night and day. The one jar of rice that's been cooked that's in the jar, or it previously was cooked 6 months earlier, it actually doesn't look that bad. I mean, I don't know that I want to eat that, but if I was hungry, maybe. But the jar that's labeled, you fool, you stink, it looks like black death warmed over. Okay? What a difference. The rice that's on the right is almost totally rotten, while the one on the left is still pretty healthy. If rice reacts this way to emotionally charged words, how do you think people's bodies react? I'm really talking to myself here. Water makes up 80% of the rice, as well as our bodies. Did you know that your body's mainly made of water? Where did this come from right here? This is interesting, too. There's an example of the research of David Chamberlain, a San Diego psychologist and one of the early pioneers of pre- and perinatal psychology. See, this is interesting, before the baby's born. According to Chamberlain, birth memories that arise in the course of insight-oriented psychotherapy illustrate how babies can be stung and poisoned for decades by unkind remarks such as, what's wrong with her head? And wow, this looks like a sickly one. Anyway, it's just interesting what words you say. And you know what I come back to? I try to say this verse to myself because I haven't gotten there yet. And I need to hear it probably about 10,000 more times. But in the book of Romans chapter 12, do not be overcome by evil, but rather overcome evil with good. Well, all of us know, just have to be reminded all the time. You know, we're human beings, we forget. We have to be continually reminded. That may be one of the reasons why. If you can actually write down what you want to do, what if you took a sheet of paper and you started writing down positive phrases like, I appreciate you so much, or thank you. How would you, if you were going to say a prayer of thanksgiving to God, would it be pretty positive? Absolutely it would. Maybe that's why the Bible says in Thessalonians chapter 5 that in every circumstance give thanks. And sometimes it's hard to wrap your mind around that. But you know what? You really can say thank you to God in every circumstance. I didn't say it's easy, because there's a lot of people that have had a lot of bad things happen. You know, a woman was telling me the other day about what her mother did to her, and she said, I've pretty much broken off contact. I just can't do it anymore. And this woman's probably maybe in her middle 50s, give or take. But you could just see how much pain and harm that she's been through just by the words of her mother. Supposed to be the one person that she can trust more than anybody else. Okay, so if you would like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. And there's a phone line open. And so hopefully I will be able to give you some answer to your question. Good morning. Welcome to the program. I'm Dr. Morgan.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you today?
I am pretty good. I have a friend who has come to me for advice, and she's about 75, and she's had curly, thick hair all of her life, and now it's just like daily thinning and straightening.
Yeah.
Is there something she can do?
Well, let me tell you the first place that my mind goes. You did say she's 75, didn't you?
Roughly, yes.
Roughly, okay. Which means she could really be 95, you just don't know. I'm joking. Okay. There is an organ system that filters the blood. It's quite an elegant yet sophisticated organ called the kidneys. And so when your friend has a salmon fillet or has an omelet with eggs and cheese for breakfast, what she's getting is she's getting protein. Proteins are broken down into amino acids. Now, one of the main jobs of your kidneys is to help direct protein. It's not the only player. So the hair can start to become very, very thin, especially in women, when the kidneys are becoming weaker and weaker and weaker. Now, I kind of caught myself as soon as I said that, so I'm just saying that maybe this is an indication there's a weakness in her kidneys. If her hair's gone from curly and very, very curly, like Shirley Temple curly, to all of a sudden it's straight and thin, then my mind goes to the kidneys. Now, there's a reflex found on the rib cage right there by the stomach. It's called Rydler's reflex. And I realize you can't just simply replicate this, but in my mind, if I push on her Rydler's reflex point and it's excruciatingly tender, then that's what I start to think. I think most likely either she's not getting enough protein to meet her needs, or she's not digesting or assimilating the protein. And so there's three or four ways we could do this. Number one, she could try to eat higher quality protein. Okay? That could be everything from eating salmon. Now, you have no experience with eating Arctic cod, but you've probably talked to people that have, and they say it's probably the most delicious thing they've ever tried, especially if a team of researchers from New Zealand makes it for them. Could you fantasize and agree with that?
I could.
Okay. And so either she starts eating protein to see if there's an improvement, but the best proteins are usually going to be from like ocean fish. Not everybody likes fish. I get that. But eggs would be a good way to do it, and you're looking for an improvement. At 75, she might benefit greatly by taking a protein digesting enzyme. And so if you're looking at enzymes, she might want to flip the label around and look at the one that's pretty heavy on proteases. Proteases are enzymes that help break apart the protein and utilize it so it can do its job and get better. Now, so she may need a protein digesting enzyme. We may need to improve the quality of protein that she's taking into her body. But because it's the hair that's getting thinner, there's probably two or three minerals that we really need to look at that she might be low in. One of them is called silica. Or silicone. When I say silicone, okay, I'm not talking about the caulking that you put around the window or door to keep the air drafts out. That's not what I'm suggesting. But you get silica, for example. When a person eats a bowl of rolled organic oats to make a bowl of oatmeal, that's got silica in it. And there's actually a supplement that's based on silica, and that's easy to take. And there's an herb called organic horsetail, and it's rich in silica. But in some women, you're going to start to see, when they're low in silica, you're going to start to see all the tissues made of pure protein. They become more fragile, which I know this is gross. I'm not telling you to take a tuft of her hair and burn it in your cigarette lighter. I'm just saying you have possession of a cigarette lighter. I didn't say you're smoking cigarettes. But if you burn it, what does hair smell like? It's pretty gross, isn't it?
It is.
Well, that's protein right there. And so silica, if you have a deficiency, yeah, the skin becomes pretty thin. The hair becomes thin. Everything becomes more brittle. It starts to lose some of its integrity and structure. The proteins just aren't glued together as well. So the other two minerals I look at are usually either zinc or iron. And so as a woman ages, it may be that, and I'm just kind of making up a scenario here, just because I say it doesn't make it so. If she's taking a baby aspirin every day, then every time she takes a baby aspirin, she's losing quite a bit of blood. And so the body can only do so much work and produce so much energy. And so if she's taking a baby aspirin, she might actually be losing blood at a little bit faster rate than what her stem cells in her bone marrow can replace it or correct it. So if she went to a doctor, they could do a simple blood test where they can measure her red blood cell count, her hematocrit, her hemoglobin. Probably the easiest one is the one, there's a reserve of iron called ferritin. Have you ever heard the test called ferritin?
Yes.
If she took a ferritin test and hers was 13, that means, oh boy, there's nothing we can do to stop the hair from falling out and getting thin. And so usually with a woman, you want it to be closer to 40, but when it starts to go, when ferritin starts to go lower than 40 on a woman, it's much easier for all these changes to take place in the hair. And I know I'm just trying to make it sound simple, but on one level, you've got to have iron to regenerate and regrow strong, healthy hair. Does that sound reasonable?
Yes.
I would say the other mineral has got to be zinc. Zinc has got to be one of the most incredible things. If you get too much of it, it can be toxic. But I would say the main problem that people have is they have too little of it. And I think I've said this before, maybe once, maybe twice, that two of the most common symptoms of a zinc deficiency would be just a craving for starches and carbohydrates. It's like you could drive by the bakery and your car on its own decides to do a U-turn and go across the median to pull into the parking lot real fast, against your will. But that would be low zinc.
Okay.
Okay. What else you want to know?
Are there any other supplements? And would the trace minerals from Standard Process cover the zinc and iron?
It covers a lot of them, yeah. But maybe the way that I'm thinking about this is you're trying to pinpoint where the person's weaknesses resides, and that's why I'm kind of covering it this way. If she's anemic, then obviously we need to run toward that. That might be a product like Farafood or Unsulfured Blackstrap Molasses, or if you eat grass-fed beef, grass-fed beef actually probably has every single nutrient in it that she needs to grow hair.
Okay.
I know what you want me to say. You want me to make a recommendation of eating liver and onions, don't you?
I suspect she does.
Then, sweetheart, we're going to start eating liver and onions once a week. And actually, I think, you know, my job is so interesting at times because I can just ask. Sometimes I never even have to ask a person how they're doing. They tell me, they'll come in, they'll say, "You're not changing anything that you have me on because I feel so good right now. I don't want to lose that feeling. I'm feeling good." But that would be when your body's healing at a faster rate than it is breaking down. And so what she's dealing with is the tissues, specifically the hair, it is breaking down faster than the ability of her body to rejuvenate. And so what healing would look like is we figure out where her weakness is so she can rejuvenate. And just because she's 75 doesn't mean that she can't rejuvenate. But because she's 75, she doesn't have the same chemistry as, say, a 7-year-old girl does.
Right.
The body does wind down, doesn't it?
Indeed.
So those are the things that I would think of right there. If I had to choose one food that I see day in and day out that causes the most hair loss, it would be the man-made, modern, genetically modified, gene-spliced, hybridized wheat. I didn't say heirloom or organic or good, wholesome, fermented sourdough wheat. That stuff can be awesome, but for some people, hair loss represents an autoimmune reaction, which means her immune system is quite irritated, and it's finding some undigested wheat protein like gluten or gliadin near the follicles of her hair, and the body says, "What is this foreign protein doing here? Let's attack, attack, attack." So there's a lot of reactions in the body that take place due to what's called autoimmune. That means your body is kind of attacking itself, which is not good.
Definitely. I can relate. Okay, well, thank you very much for your help.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks a bunch.
And for tomorrow, Christ is risen.
Oh, good. It's Easter Sunday, isn't it?
Yes.
Good job. Thank you for mentioning that. I appreciate you very much.
Good. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. If you would like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line once again open at 903-586-5257. Just remember to turn your radio volume down, or even better, turn it off when you get on the phone with me. Good morning, and welcome to the program. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Well, I thought I pushed the button the right way. Okay, if you want to call back, it's perfectly fine. 903-586-5257. And I'll get you right in. Who, me? Push the button wrong? Yeah, I have once or twice. But there is a phone line open if you'd like to call. Now, I know everybody has their own philosophy on how to get the body to heal and how to support people. But I've always found the very best way to do anything when it comes to helping a human being heal or improve, well, what is it? It's trying to support the areas of tissue that are the sickest or the weakest. And so is my example from the previous caller. If a woman is anemic, man, you would do so well to figure that one out. And you know what? The way it used to be, I'm kind of fond of the old ways. It used to be that a physician, and this is not meant to be negative, it's just we're thinking through it. They had to rely on their wits. They would ask questions. They would spend time in examination. And that was probably 90% of the doctor's visit with the patient was observing changes in the body. They would look at the fingernails. They would look at the gums. They would look under the eyelids. They would have them stick out their tongue. They would press on the skin. They would look at the skin on the ankles. They would look at the fingernails. Did I mention fingernails yet? But they're looking for all these. They would examine the hair. They would look for all these visible clues. It's called a physical examination. And a doctor would say, man, I wonder if this woman's anemic. And then what they would do is they would start trying to physically examine the body. And for example, if a doctor presses over, and this is just old school medicine right here, but if a doctor pressed over the center of the breastbone and it was extremely tender, he thinks, aha, must be anemic. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. One quick question. I love salmon, but I'm lazy, and I prefer it in a can. And it's wild-caught salmon, Alaskan salmon.
Now, when you say lazy, do you mean as opposed to standing next to three grizzly bears in a stream in Alaska to catch it? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I
then I'm lazy, too.
That's right. No, I prefer to just buy a can of salmon and cook it.
Hey, and, you're doing and, great. I'm proud of you. That's excellent.
And I look for wild caught.
Oh, and that's really a good point that you're making, because if it's not wild caught, there's always a chance it could be raised in a sea of antibiotics and hormones.
Right.
So, yeah,
right.
That's a good point. I'm proud of you. That's good.
Okay. Well, I'm taking you up on that liver and onions. I've been doing that once a week.
Well, so,
entirely, so.
you know what? I hate to ask your response. Did you throw up? No, I'm joking.
No.
Well, do you see a benefit to doing it?
No. But I did the other day. I couldn't eat all they put on the plate, so I brought it home and I put it in the refrigerator and ate it the next day, and you know it was better.
Hang on, I got to write that down. A caller said they actually ate liver and onions and lived. Good.
Hey, another quick question,
sure.
And then I'll hang up. I love listening to you. Is bread, and I'm trying to eat maybe I love bread, but restricted to sourdough bread that's baked with yeast.
Oh, this sounds horrible. Restricted to sourdough bread. Great.
Yeah, with yeast. But I always look for ingredients of yeast.
Why do you do that?
The permit. Well, Doctor, I read it one time, a friend of mine did, and said that the yeast, if it's fermented with yeast, it does something to lectins or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It helps improve them, doesn't it?
Right.
Oh, no, that's interesting. I'm glad you told me about that. So if you get like a sprouted sourdough bread that's been fermented, you're good with that one, right?
Right.
Now, is that type of wheat bread, is that agreeable to your body?
Well, yeah. I love it.
And
it seems to be, but anyway, that's what I look for.
Do you think that a grizzly bear would eat your offering of a salmon sandwich on sourdough to allow you to fish next to him?
Well, actually, I don't think I would eat it that way. So I don't think that grizzly bear would either. But I do love it sautéed in onions.
You know what I thought of?
The more onions and garlic, the better it is.
Oh, my goodness. Who do you think you are eating all these onions? Don't you know they're full of quercetin and good antioxidants that are good for the body?
Yeah. And you know what? I sort of crave it. So that's
wow. That
must be some kind of nut.
So your body's telling you to eat that stuff. That's good. Hey, keep up the good work. That's great.
Okay.
I like what you're saying.
Okay. Well, I was just curious about the canned. I do eat fresh, too. So.
Well, and now that you told me you're eating salmon, I probably won't be able to see you as a very sick male patient anytime soon. So I guess it'll have to work. Hey,
well,
keep up the good work, man.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, bye. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. You know what? I had this image in my mind I can't remember which website I was looking at, but this ad pops up on these people that are making bagels and they ship them all over the world. But I think it showed some salmon, some smoked salmon on one of them. But it was the thickest bagel of all time. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. 903-586-5257. Folks, I don't know what I'm going to do if all these men keep eating salmon, because that's really cutting into my money-making ability of treating sick, sick, super sick people. You know I'm joking about that. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm not so good.
Oh, dear. Well, what can I do to assist you?
Okay. I went to the doctor. I was having some bladder problems. I wasn't able to empty my bladder. That's what the doctor said. I started some supplements. It was Dimonose and cranberry pills.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They weren't helping very much. I started to be constipated. I was taking two pills in the morning and two pills at night. Then the doctor put me on some medicine, and I didn't know exactly if it was helping or not.
Was it an antibiotic?
No, it was not. It was called Tumsilin or Vesicure.
Okay.
Like I said, I thought it was helping, but then I started having problems with more constipation, and then I started bleeding.
Bleeding as in from when you would have a bowel movement, or bleeding as in when you would have, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that doesn't sound great.
No. Now looking back, I think I should have stopped taking the medicine, but I didn't.
Well, how long has this issue with your bladder been going on?
Since last October.
Okay, so we're like 6 months removed, give or take.
Well, I went to finally see the doctor last February. Before that, I went to see a gynecologist, and they said, well, I think you changed, they thought I needed to change my diet.
Right. And did you? What were the recommendations?
They gave me a list of all the things that I should avoid, like tea, cranberry, vitamin C, and I did try them, but nothing.
Well, did they give you a diagnosis of interstitial cystitis?
No, they did not. No.
Okay. No, that just sounds like a recommendation that would be made by an OBGYN if a woman had continual bladder pain. Now, would you say that you had bladder pain?
At that point, it was painful. Yes, like. It would just hurt going to the bathroom.
But it had nothing to do with a bladder infection, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right, I'm starting to understand this.
Because I thought it was a UTI, and they said it wasn't.
And they showed you your lab work from your blood tests, and they also showed you your urinalysis, is that correct?
They just said it was negative.
Well, I'm not one to really buy into that stuff unless I see it. I hate to sound like Doubting Thomas, but I really think the lab test, you need to at least see it, because I hear the same story all the time, and quite often it shows the presence of a continual ongoing urinary tract infection. So,
yes.
Sometimes you don't know what to believe, but if you have the lab test in front of you, you can believe that.
Yes. Before I went to see the PA urologist, I went to see my PCP, and he did do a micro analysis of my urine.
Yeah.
And he said if we could at least find something, and he found something that it was called I can't remember the term.
Maybe albumin or microalbumin.
Yes, that's it.
Wow, I just made that up. How did I do that? No, I'm joking. Well, and it just means you're, if that's what he found, if it was elevated, that means your kidneys are leaking protein.
Okay.
See, technically, you cannot separate the kidneys from the tubes that connect the kidneys to the bladder, which are called the ureters from the bladder. They're all connected at the hip. Do you like to eat spinach?
We do sometimes, but not a lot, no.
Is there any possibility that you might eat nuts or white potatoes frequently?
Sometimes we do eat potatoes. Peanuts, my husband eats a lot of peanuts, me not so much.
Well, all I'm doing is I'm just thinking there's a substance called oxalate or oxalic acid, and sometimes that stuff can really make the bladder hurt nonstop. So we want to come up with some type of solution and figure out what the root cause of it is, and so I want to keep a very, very open mind. I mean, just because I say it doesn't make it so, but you always have to consider what if, and can I just give you like three or four different ideas, please?
Please, please do, because I'm supposed to be having a CT scan, and I've been referred to another specialist because I'm always in pain now.
Now, are you in pain all the time?
I'm in pain, especially now after a bowel movement. I'm in pain for hours.
Did they check you for a yeast infection of any kind, like, for example, like candida?
They did check me. The gynecologist initially did, and when I thought I was having, you know, a UTI, she said, "Oh, it's just a yeast infection." And
oh, she said that.
She said that, yes, and I didn't think it was a yeast infection.
Well, how do we know it's completely gone?
Well, later on, I said, you know, well, I still have the problems. They put me on more medicine.
Did you get any relief initially when you took an anti-yeast or an antifungal drug?
Very little. The second time, it was like, okay, I think it's going to help. And then I thought, no, it's really not doing anything. I don't think it's a yeast infection.
Well, you might have had just a little bit of hope at first. There might have been a little bit of a symptomatic change, but it didn't go away. It kind of came back,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Well, exactly. And that second time, they gave me two pills. They said, take one pill the first day, and then wait 4 days, and I thought, I don't even see any change. No.
Well, number one, you weren't born with any of this stuff, were you?
No.
How many years did you live and walk on the earth without any problems with your bladder?
48 years. I'm 48 years old.
Okay, so you haven't had any problem until just here recently, right?
Correct.
So something has changed inside of you, so I need to give you three or four different ideas, and I'm so sorry that I'm not being more specific, but I'm just like you. I want to figure this thing out. And so
I'm desperate.
Well, and bless your heart, I would be too. If the tables were turned and if I said, "Hey Roy, go to the bathroom." I don't want to. It hurts like hellfire. No, thank you very much. Well, it would
That's
get old.
Exactly.
And you know what? And I'm not trying to be sarcastic by saying this, but if every doctor you went to got to experience the joy of passing their urine like you do, then they would say, you know what? I think I'm going to take this real seriously now because this hurts like I'll get out. And that's usually the way it works. And so I'm sorry. I don't mean to ever be dismissive or say somebody didn't do their job, but here's what I would do to have a do-over.
Okay.
What I would do is I would request just the very simple copies of all the lab work. And you really don't have to be an expert. All you have to do is just look at it, and if you see something that's high or low, I would make a note of that. And there's so many websites now that you can just go online and type in, what does albumin do in the body? Or what would happen, what does it mean when albumin is high in the urine? And you can start looking it up for yourself, and you can start asking the question, well, why didn't my doctor cover that? Or that seems to be pretty significant to me. Why wasn't that brought up? But like the concept of the yeast, under normal circumstances, every human being that walks the earth, they got a lot of bacteria in them and they got a lot of yeast and fungus in them. But if the yeast is in very, very small populations and they just kind of sit over there in the corner and mind their own P's and Q's and they don't bother anybody, then it's not a problem. But when yeast starts to grow or blossom or explode in overgrowth, it's a problem. So I really, you know, this is radio. I can't do it the way I want to. What I want is, I want a hologram of your lab test to flash right in front of me where I can read it real quick and say, oh, ma'am, here's your problem right here. Let's look at this and this and this. But there's a term that's being used more and more, and I like it. It's called biofilm. B-I-O-F-I-L-M. Biofilm. Okay. And a lot of these organisms, what they'll do is, what if they create a biofilm right there at the edge of your urethra or the lower fundus of your bladder, and they're rooted in? And a biofilm is basically where, let's just say a fungus like a candida, it just makes this, I know this is gross what I'm fixing to say, so please forgive me. This is a family-oriented program, by the way. But if it's a slimy, gunky, snotty, gooey, ooey, yucky, slimy film, that's what the fungus is hiding under. And it makes it really hard for either antibiotics or antifungal drugs to penetrate that biofilm where the yeast or the fungus is living. It's hard to get rid of it. And so you start looking at things, well, what breaks down biofilm? Well, for example, garlic is a godsend. Garlic has been shown to help dissolve and break down these biofilms in the kidneys and the bladder. So if you can break down the biofilm of the toxic germ that might be living inside of you, and I'm just theoretically saying these things, then I would look at that right there. The next thing, and I'm going to say this one just really quickly, but you know, the dominant hormone in a woman is called estrogen, right?
Correct.
I don't think the world is a better place if really high testosterone masculine men switch out the testosterone for estrogen. I know plenty try it, but it's probably not in the best interest of the world for men to do that. And so one of the things that makes you intimately female, I don't even know what the definition of a woman is, do you? No, I'm just joking about that. I think I heard that in the news recently, that a woman, she didn't understand. Well, a woman can have a baby and a man can't. How about that? No. But when women start having lower production of the female hormone estrogen, they can really start having bladder problems. And let me explain one of the reasons why. There's going to be what I would call an optimal, or another way that I like to say it, there's going to be a Goldilocks just right amount of estrogen to help maintain all the female tissues. And so you have what's called the female reproductive area. Or if you want to say the birth canal, that's where the baby comes out when you have a baby. And so all that tissue is maintained by progesterone and estrogen. So if a woman starts having much less production or less than optimal, that's where she can start having bladder problems. Now let me get on to the next topic, because this is the one that I see that causes pain all the time. But you're going to have to give me a little bit of artistic license on this one, okay?
Okay.
Okay, there is a substance that's found in food that's called oxalate, calcium oxalate, oxalic acid. And so I'm just kind of telling you in general terms that probably 95% plus of all kidney stones are going to be made of a buildup of calcium called calcium oxalate. And so like I had a woman come see me this morning, and she's a little, not this morning, this week is what I meant to say. And she's a little bit disturbed because when she would look into the toilet, it looks like flakes of sand or pieces of glass that have come out of her urine. And I'm going, ma'am, that's really what you want. We're trying to gently dissolve, or what you're doing dietarily is you're trying to dissolve kidney stones or calcium that's built up in your kidneys. It's almost like a bunch of rust or scaling that builds up, and it can do so in the bladder also. But oxalic acid is one of the things that do that. And usually the foods that have the most oxalic acid are going to be things like spinach and white potatoes, nuts of any kind. If I'm not mistaken, maybe almonds are at the top of the list, but I like nuts. I kind of go through these different kicks where I like Brazil nuts a lot, and then I like pecans a lot, which when I say pecans, I'm talking about plain. I'm not talking about the millionaire chocolate pecan candies filled with caramel. Although I like those too, I just don't eat them. But in some people, they have a buildup of oxalates because they've had antibiotic therapy earlier in their life. So if I asked you a simple question, how many rounds of antibiotics have you had in your lifetime? What would you say? Just a rough number. You don't have to be perfect.
Just a few times.
Okay.
When I've been sick, but not a lot, no.
Well, the reason I'm talking about calcium oxalate is because literally under a microscope they look like razor blades.
Huh.
And literally, if you want a woman's bladder to hurt all the time, there's almost always a higher level of oxalic acid. And this can even transfer. And you know, there's a lot of mysteries to the human body. I don't understand all of them. But if you have too much oxalic acid in your body, it's just going to cut you to shreds every time you urinate. And I don't really know many doctors that measure for that. And there's not like the greatest amount of research. But what I'm going to say is this is just my phraseology. But in the real world, it's the job of a doctor to help figure out what's wrong with the person, help them to get well. And so what if your body, because you've had some antibiotics, you don't have enough beneficial bacteria to break down the oxalic acid? This is really a real thing. Well, we might have to change your diet slightly to improve the health of your bladder and your kidneys. Actually, I probably have five people listening to me this morning, and probably four of them are women, one man, the guy that eats canned wild-caught salmon. but there's going to be women that what they choose to use as a sweetener is either called erythritol, allulose, sorbitol, mannitol, stevia. You ever heard of any of those things?
I use stevia.
You don't anymore, baby.
Okay.
If you want to cut your bladder and kidneys to shreds, consume stevia. Don't do it. Stop it right now.
Oh.
How long have you used stevia?
Not much. Sometimes I put it in my coffee, but...
Well, if you're not using a lot of it, that may not be it, but I would request... And you know what? In the real world, I can't get a person's bladder or kidney well as long as they're on stevia. Can't be done. So I have had that... Well, I'm going to say in this situation, the answer to your question is yes. It is not good for your situation.
Do you think because I'm going through menopause that has a lot to do with...
Well, yes, and that's why I said that, and I didn't do a good job of it, evidently, but that's why I'm saying that if your estrogen levels drop real low, you can have this problem also, because it's the job of estrogen. These are the menopause hormones to maintain the health and the integrity of your bladder and the female reproductive area. And other tissues also. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I should have said that better. I'm glad you brought that to my attention. So if you're low in hormones that you need, you can have bladder problems. That's probably more direct.
I kept thinking that it's because I'm... And I was tested for my menopause levels, the F something that is called a hormone.
Yeah, follicular stimulating hormone.
And I was told, yes, I'm going through menopause.
Exactly.
So I kept telling the PA doctor at the gynecologist's office that I thought it was due to my menopause.
What did they say?
No, that has nothing to do with it.
Well, I mean, that's just an opinion that's probably not really based on facts. And I'm not trying to criticize somebody, but if you tell me your gut instinct is that's a component, then we need to pursue that. And so, you know how easy it is for them to do a test and just measure the estrogen and the progesterone and testosterone?
Yes.
Do you have dry eyes?
No.
Okay. Is your skin becoming a little bit thinner? Do you have vaginal dryness?
Yes. It's definitely thinner.
Then bingo, you've got some hormone issues.
Okay.
I just don't know how much of a component that is, but I know if it were me, I would want a doctor to say, hey, Roy, your estrogen's low. That sounds stupid, me saying that about myself. Because I'm not a woman.
Well,
he could say testosterone. But if your estrogen or progesterone is much lower than what would be considered ideal to maintain the integrity of the tissues, then we can start going, well, what do we do about that? Is there an herb that might help improve that? How can I modify this or that? Or do I need bioidentical hormones or something like that? Do you have all the organs that God gave you?
Yes.
So you still have your ovaries, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Do you have your tonsils?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. So I'm with you on I'm with you on this deal. I think it's worth pursuing the idea that we figure out if your hormone levels are subpar. if they are, that's really your benefit. Yeah, here's my rhetorical question. Who benefits by figuring out your hormone levels? You do.
I do.
Yeah,
I do.
Exactly.
I keep telling everybody that I saw, well, could it be my menopause?
No, yeah, exactly.
No, nothing to do.
No. You're right. Just disregard what they're saying. Find somebody else that'll listen to you. But if they could measure, so you need to get a hold of all your lab tests and just look at them. And so yes, what you said was correct. They were right about that. Follicular stimulating hormone gives you a pretty precise indication whether or not you're in menopause. But I would say, if you really are in menopause, you're in menopause way too early. You should be about 53.
Well, I've been on menopause for, you know.
Well, that means that you've had your fair share of stress and then some. Is that true?
A lot.
Well, it's probably been excessive stress, meaning a level that would probably be a little bit taxing to your body. That's what causes early menopause, too much stress. Every single time.
Yeah.
It's actually a term called a pregnenolone steal, but that's probably too much information. So, and see, this is the way that I would view all this. What do we do to get you to a better place? Yeah, exactly. And part of it is if you heal the requirements of the body, that's where the pain disappears and goes away. What you have is you have chronic inflammation that leads to pain. So what needs to be healed? Is this primarily a bladder problem? Is it a kidney problem? Is it dietary? Is it stress? Is it female hormones, like is it the menopause? I'm agreeing with you. But we need to pinpoint what needs the most help. And that's what a doctor is really supposed to do, is they're supposed to prioritize. This is the issue. Now, they can make a comment. A doctor could tell a patient all day long they're not anemic. But if they don't do a blood test, how do they really know for sure?
Correct.
But I really am rooting for you. And I'm sorry it's so complicated, but I do think everything is solvable. You just got to be willing to work through it. That's called labor. It's called work.
Yes. Well, I am supposed to have a CT scan on the 28th. And
they're going to be looking for a specific disease or pathology with that.
Correct.
But get all your lab tests and take a look at them.
Okay.
I bet you anything.
Start doing some homework.
That's it. And I really think it's going to be easy for you. And you're very, very smart. And plus, you win the prize. But I've really enjoyed talking to you today, and I hope you have a great Easter.
Thank you so much, Dr. Morgan.
Yes, thank you. You have a great weekend, and so everybody
thank
else
you.
Too. Uh-huh, bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thank you. New brain cells. You know what? Instead of just lying around watching TV, why don't you read a book? Reading and writing has been shown to grow brain cells. I have this balanced disc in my office, and I kind of play with it all the time. And you know what? It's hard to stay on it. But you need a challenge. The question is, can you look at yourself in the mirror right now, or if you don't have a mirror in front of you, can you honestly look in the mirror and say, thank you very much for all that I have right now. Thank you for this challenge. Thank you for this difficulty. And then say, I accept. And what are you going to do to work on it? I mean, it's your health. I'm telling you, you talk about one of the greatest blessings that God gives us. Oh, He is so good to us. It is so amazing. You know what? In the world that we're living in right now, this should be the easiest thing to talk about and the easiest thing to do, because you've got so many people that are so enabled, they don't really care to work. I keep reading articles from the Wall Street Journal saying that more people that are able-bodied are leaving the workforce because they're not being recognized or they're not being paid what they felt they're worth. Well, how are they going to pay their electric bill unless they work? It's a gift. So start working on your health today, and Lord willing, I will be back this time next week on the program Health Essentials.